You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
And I'm Katie Frankwitz. The federal government will soon propose ramping up logging in the Blue Mountains area in Oregon and Washington. OPB's April Ehrlich reports.
The U.S. Forest Service hasn't yet published its proposal for the three national forests in northeastern Oregon and southeastern Washington, but it shared a draft with some local leaders. That proposal includes more than tripling the amount of timber that can come out of the Umatilla, Malheur, and Willawa-Whitman National Forests. Mark Webb is executive director of the nonprofit Blue Mountains Forest Partners, which coordinates between loggers and environmentalists. He doubts the agency's lofty logging goals.
In part because the local mill structure can't handle that volume, and it's unlikely that other mills would make the investments to tool up for that.
Webb also questions whether the Forest Service has enough staff. Still, some county leaders hope that these proposed changes might convince mills to expand their capacity and create more jobs. I'm April Ehrlich, reporting.
Oregon Coast lawmakers are urging the Trump administration to stop removing buoys that track ocean conditions. The bipartisan group says the move is placing the safety and economy of coastal communities at risk. OPB's Bryce Dole reports.
These observatories provide real-time data to fishermen, mariners, and scientists. They assess wind, waves, and currents, and even help community members manage fisheries and prepare for tsunamis and earthquakes. But in recent months, the National Science Foundation has been removing the buoys, including off the coast of Newport. Senator David Brock Smith is a Republican lawmaker who signed a letter to the Science Foundation. He says coastal leaders were not consulted before the buoys were taken out of the water.
Pulling them out early is just, I believe, and my caucus members agree, that it's an ill-conceived plan.
State lawmakers want the foundation to put the buoys back and explain to Congress why it wants to remove them. The National Science Foundation did not return a request for comment. I'm Bryce Dole, reporting.
Cleanup of an oil spill from a long unused pipe at the Port of Astoria is complete as of this week, and the state will not require any follow-up remediation. However, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and the U.S. Coast Guard will continue to monitor affected areas over the next 2 weeks, according to a spokesperson for the state. As of Monday, the state reports cleanup crews have recovered more than 11 tons of oily waste and more than 3,000 gallons of oily water. Port Executive Director Will Isom said the good news is the bunker fuel was contained within the slip and didn't get out into the main channel of the Columbia River.
So at this point, our focus has kind of shifted towards how do we pay for this? Because you know, getting a $2.5 million surprise like this over pipes, the best we can tell, have not been in use for close to 5 decades, is just unfortunate.
The spill was first reported as an oil sheen coming out from beneath Pier 2 at the end of May. Response crews determined that it originated from a previously undocumented fueling pipeline system under the pier, and it contained residual bunker oil. The section of the pipe that discharged the oil has been removed. The remaining piping was capped. I'm Katie Frankowitz reporting for KMUN.
An apartment complex is going ahead in downtown Warrenton. The Warrenton City Commission overturned a prior rejection of a 10-unit multifamily housing development on North Main Avenue. City planning commissioners originally rejected the development because of parking concerns, access to the lot, storm runoff, and a turnaround area for trash or fire trucks. But proponents argued that Warrenton's codes at the time of the rejection were not in compliance with state rules. Language in some of Warrenton's codes leaves it open to interpretation by city planning officials. The city is in the process of updating all its codes to comply with state development rules. City commissioners deem that the reasons given for the earlier denial of the apartment project were invalid. Mayor Henry Ballenshefer said the project represents the first hearing the city council has had under the new regime of state mandates. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Columbia Press.
You're listening to news on KMUN.
Oregon education officials are recommending to repeal and replace compulsory school attendance rules. Oregon has the highest absentee rates in the nation. In 2024, roughly 1 in 3 Oregon students were chronically absent. Oregon education officials presented lawmakers with a plan to combat absenteeism at a meeting earlier this week. Among the recommendations in the report include repealing 11 state statutes relating to compulsory school attendance and replacing them with statutes that would offer attendance requirements and exemptions. The report also described some state attendance laws as outdated. The State Board of Education would be tasked with coming up with new statutes, and attendance would be wrapped up into new legislatively mandated accountability measures. Notably absent is any recommendation for punitive action or a framework for accountability from students or their families when a student continually misses school. Candace Castillo, Deputy Director of Academics at the Oregon Education Department, said compulsory policies can be helpful to some extent, but they need to build an approach that allows educators to support student needs. The presentation left lawmakers with more questions than answers, with some wanting more emphasis on student accountability. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com. As temperatures rise across Oregon, air conditioning is becoming more vital to the state's public health and safety. In recent years, 100-degree days have become more common in Oregon without the proper infrastructure to handle it. Far more people face heat stroke and other illnesses tied to overheating as a result. Vivek Shandas, an environmental professor at Portland State University, says air conditioning has become a public health necessity rather than a consumer preference. Sherman and Gilliam were two of the state's hottest counties from June to August last year. About one in five housing units there lack air conditioning. The Oregon legislature has attempted to make cooling more accessible with mixed results. A bill that would have called for owners of buildings with 10 or more units to provide cooling solutions died in the Joint Ways and Means Committee last year. The state has an incentive program that has given 6,000 homeowners, landlords, and new developments more money to install heat pumps. This story comes to us through a news partnership with Oregon Journalism Project and was reported on by Kushbu Rathor, online at OregonJournalismProject.org. Oregon has always been big on timber and produces more lumber than any other state. But timber companies say they're having a hard time hiring workers. Joni Audenland visited an event in Sandy that aims to create more interest, a chainsaw carving competition.
Located just behind a car dealership, a cacophony of chainsaws hangs in the air. It may sound like something straight out of a horror movie, but it's actually the fourth annual Sandy Invitational Chainsaw Competition. 17 artists have gathered from across the Pacific Northwest for 3 days to carve sculptures using a variety of chainsaws. The details on these pieces are incredible.
Some of these things are like 6 feet tall and 6 feet wide, these gigantic logs. And so we've got people making Bigfoots, and we have buzzards, and I think there's a frog riding a snail over here somewhere.
Austin Ernesti is the executive director of Trajectory, the organization that hosts this event. The nonprofit works to spur interest in careers in the forest. Sandy, like much of Oregon, was built on the logging industry. But Ernesti says many kids today aren't aware of the opportunities out there.
Things like, oh, I'm a timber cruiser, like, kids don't know what that is. And so if that's not something that they even know exists, how do they find those jobs?
It's no secret the timber industry in Oregon isn't what it used to be. But while there are fewer jobs, industry leaders say they struggle to fill the positions they do have. A 2021 U.S. Forest Service study found the long hours and dangerous conditions weed out many potential applicants. One of those industry leaders is J.R. Hendershot, who works for Peterson Caterpillar. He says they have trouble hiring all kinds of employees, from operators to mechanics. Part of the issue? He believes timber has a PR problem, and that many Oregonians don't understand how the industry works.
You know, they're out there working a job that creates a renewable product and putting people to work. And yeah, I think we are still fighting that negative publicity nowadays, unfortunately.
That's a battle being waged right here in Sandy. Hundreds of people have gathered to marvel at the artwork and see the power of these machines firsthand. One of the grandest pieces of this event belongs to Johnny Kimball of Mount Hood. He's making a gigantic forest gnome, wearing a backpack and holding multiple tree saplings.
Oh, it's going to be a gnome planting saplings was the idea to try to tie the forest theme together, and I like gnomes.
He knows how dangerous this work can be. He has a large scar on his hand from when a small chainsaw sliced it open.
And then I lost my finger because it turns out hemlock is poisonous. So I got a little splinter embedded and it swelled up and the infection just never healed. So they had to take it off.
But this craft is a perfect fit for him, a combination of physical and artistic work. This event is specifically trying to appeal to young people who don't want to go to college. Kimball says that was his experience.
I was never much of a college candidate, you know what I mean? I don't like being at a desk. And so I don't know, exposing people to things like this is probably the best way to give them choices in life.
A few stations over, Brittany Hughes is making a large rose, inspired by Beauty and the Beast. She started carving during the pandemic and soon couldn't stop making sculptures. She specializes in making adorable little donkeys.
The element of danger is actually pretty fun. It's just a beautiful thing to take a tree and turn it into something that you can love for a long time.
She spent a long time working in forests across Oregon and hopes events like this can encourage more people to do the same.
Honestly, we need more people working in the woods. It's a very important job, and this is what Oregon is known for, is their timber. People need to know how to do this because it's kind of a dying breed.
All the art pieces will be auctioned off, with the proceeds going to purchase equipment for those entering the field. I'm Joni Auden-Land reporting from Sandy, Oregon.
Roseburg Schools and the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Tribe of Indians have announced a partnership to help preserve the tribe's ancestral language. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
Starting this fall, both Native and non-Native high school students can take the Tekelma language for official language credit. The last known speaker died more than a century ago, but linguists and audio recordings from the Smithsonian Institution have helped revive it. Lindsay Campman, a spokesperson with the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua, says the tribe has deemed language as important to its citizens.
And that continues to make our people strong. It's a link to be able to have something in common with your ancestors who lived a very, very different life centuries ago. But being able to speak that same language that they did, that's a powerful connection.
The Cow Creek Band is also partnering with Roseburg Schools on a statewide program to improve Native students' attendance and is gifting the district $500,000 towards renovating Roseburg High School sports complex. I'm Brian Bull, reporting in Eugene.
You're listening to KMUN, turning now to news out of Washington State. Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez quickly went to bat for her district in southwest Washington last month after a deadly implosion at a paper mill in Longview. An independent watchdog organization is now investigating the cause of the accident at the Nippon Dynawave Packaging Company. KNKX environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe spoke with the congresswoman between votes and has these highlights.
The 3rd District Democrat was in Vancouver, Washington, when she got a text with the news of the disaster. She dropped everything to find out what was going on.
I called my buddy who I know, you know, he works in mills now. And I was like, are you okay? Is your family okay? And he let me know that he was missing 2 cousins.
Both of them died in the implosion, along with 9 others. 8 were badly injured. Glusenkamp-Perez says in places like Longview, everyone and everything is interconnected.
Like the trades world, you know, especially when you narrow down to like machinists and millwrights, people all go to school together. They babysit for each other. And so it's like immediately very human terms and very close to the bone.
She used her position on the House Appropriations Committee to get $5 million in federal funding for an independent investigation of the cause of the accident. And many of her Republican colleagues provided quick support. She says rules that are in place for facilities like this need to be enforced. But she also thinks there's a balance to strike between new environmental regulations and keeping the timber industry safe and local.
If we are demanding really high-level emissions controls from these mills out of concerns for population-level health risk at the expense of infrastructure maintenance, like the non-sexy stuff, then you have environmental catastrophe and you have actual human beings who've lost their lives. And so we can't be blind to the trade-offs that we're making both with policy and with enforcement.
She's worried about the economic losses if the mill shuts down permanently. Nippon Dynawave is now paying more than 500 idled workers at its Longview plant their full regular wages through the first week of August. And Glusenkamp-Perez says about 1,000 other jobs that depend on the mill could be at risk. I'm Bellamy Palethorpe reporting.
A Seattle nonprofit is returning free World Cup tickets meant for children. It's in protest to the U.S. denying entry to a popular referee from Somalia. KNKX reporter Freddie Monades has more.
African Youth Sports Academy runs a soccer league for children of African descent. It received 20 free World Cup tickets from a city initiative to send children to matches. Tickets for games are going for around $2,000. But the nonprofit returned those tickets to show support for Omar Atan, a top soccer official from Somalia who was recently denied entry to the U.S. Ali Abdullah with the Sports Academy in Seattle says Artan's presence at the World Cup would have been like having the Somalian team there.
To us, it was like a Somali soccer team made it to the World Cup. You know, we were just trying to send him a message to show him that we love him, to show him that we admire him, that we're willing to sacrifice one life opportunity for him.
Somalia's soccer team has never made it to a World Cup. In Seattle, I'm Freddie Monades.
A tenant advocacy group in Tacoma submitted a petition Tuesday to put a ballot initiative before voters that aims to hold landlords more accountable. The group Tacoma for All collected over 8,700 signatures in support of its proposal. KNKX reporter Mitch Borden has more.
Tacoma for All is working to get the Safe Homes for All initiative on the November ballot. Tyron Moore leads the group. He says if passed, the measure would require the city to fine landlords for subpar living conditions and other violations.
Illegal rent hikes, illegal fees, and particularly bad illegal living conditions, unabated mold that is making kids sick, unabated mold that's making elderly and disabled folks sick.
The initiative would also create protections for tenant unions. The next step in getting the proposal on the November ballot is getting the signatures verified by Pierce County's election office. I'm Mitch Borden reporting.
Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news. American Democracy Minute is up next. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. At a Puerto Rico conference in May 2025, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson warned judges that recent threats from the White House are attacks on our democracy. Here's a portion of her speech. It seems as though every time I read the news or turn on the television these days, I see the affronts, and I am also reminded of the vital work that judges do to protect our constitutional order. Unfortunately, that solemn duty seems both more urgent and more difficult with each passing day. Across the nation, judges are facing increased threats of not only physical violence, but also professional retaliation just for doing our jobs. And the attacks are not random. They seem designed to intimidate those of us who serve in this critical capacity. The attacks are also not isolated incidents. That is, they impact more than just the individual judges who are being targeted. Rather, the threats and harassment are attacks on our democracy, on our system of government, and they ultimately risk undermining our Constitution and the rule of law. She concluded, "Our judges have faced challenges like the ones we face today and have prevailed. I urge you to keep going, keep doing what is right for the good of the country, and I do believe that history will vindicate your service as well." We have a link to Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's full remarks at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal. We're on Blue Sky at Democracy Minute.